So, for those of you sitting here who are interested in going to study Tibetan Buddhism, please take notice that there's no such thing as Theravada Buddhism, Mahayana Buddhism, Vajrayana Buddhism, and all that stuff. There's just one real Buddhism. And this is just pulling out that I in mind, pulling it out of the five khandhas, so that there are just the khandhas, removing this I in mind out from the khandhas. This is Buddhism. Everything else is just been added to make things showy, to make it interesting, to make it impressive, to entertain the children, and all these things. And so it makes the real teaching seem very profound, so that nobody can understand it. All this extra stuff. Please find out what the real thing is, and save yourself the trouble of the other stuff. When we've personally studied some of the important Mahayana sutras, they all begin with a lot of crazy stuff suitable for that culture. But every important Mahayana sutra ends with the same thing, removing attachment from the five khandhas. We've got a friend who's quite an intelligent person, and now they've really gotten into translating a bunch of very difficult to translate Tibetan texts. It seems that in Tibet they've got all kinds of things which haven't been translated yet, things which are very, very difficult to understand and hard to translate. And so this friend of ours, and we won't mention the person's name, has completely gotten into this and is putting all their time and energy into translating these things. But no matter what they translate, they won't really find Buddhism itself. They'll just find a lot of complex, difficult to understand things which come from the ancient Tibetan culture. They're not finding Buddhism itself. They're finding a lot of things that have been dragged into Buddhism from the old culture of that time and that place. Real Buddhism is just this one simple thing, removing the sense of I and mine from the five khandhas. This is something to study not from all those books, but from life. The scriptures that we ought to study are the scriptures, are the five khandhas within our own life, within ourselves. To study these, the body, feelings, sensations, conceptions, and consciousness within our own life, and see what they're like, and see how this attachment arises, and then see how to remove that attachment. This is the kind of scriptural study to do. To do it right here in this using our own life. So it's not necessary to go off to study Tibetan Buddhism or Sri Lankan Buddhism or Zen Buddhism or whatever. Just study it right here in your own life. The five khandhas are right here. Why do we have to go off looking for Buddhism somewhere else? Now, we don't deny that there are differences. For example, Theravada Buddhism is very straightforward, and it's kept within certain fairly strict limits. And people who don't have enough intelligence and wisdom are unable to understand the Theravada teachings properly. Then Mahayana has tried to open everything up and simplify things so that even foolish people old grandmothers in the street, the ordinary man in the road, so that they can have access to Buddhism, with the idea that this will, it's called Mahayana, the great vehicle, because it can take even the foolish people along. And then in Zen said, no, that's never going to work, and narrowed it really down, made a very exquisite, refined teaching for only the most intelligent people. If one isn't very sharp and clever, one can never figure out Zen Buddhism. So it's the most direct, teaching, but it's also only for the most intelligent. And then in Vajrayana and all those things, the Tantra and all that, they've kind of packaged the teachings in the most attractive, the most colorful, the most enticing and interesting way. So you've got basic approaches to presenting Buddhism, the direct approach, the big approach, the quick and fast approach, the attractive approach. But even so, there are these distinctions. All of these come to the same point, to the same fact, which is removing attachment from the five khandhas. In a scientific era, in an era, in a time of high technology and reason, we don't have any real need anymore to be interested in all the different forms or superficial distinctions of Buddhism. In a scientific age like this, all we need is to take a very direct, natural, and scientific approach to study the five khandhas right here and remove. All we need to ask is, how to remove attachment from the five khandhas. How to go about removing the sense of I and my from the five khandhas. In times like this, this is all we need. So there's no need to go off anywhere. It's all every need to learn from and to work with. All the tools, all the equipment are right here. We should take a direct scientific approach. Philosophy won't help us. Just thinking and speculating with ideas and opinions isn't enough. We have to take a scientific approach that deals with the real things, not just theories about things, but deal with the real things directly, experiment in a practical way. This approach will teach us how to remove attachment from the five khandhas. So we've taken the time to discuss these various characteristics of variations within Buddhism, because if we understand these points, it will make it much easier, much simpler for us to go about removing attachment from the five khandhas. So in summary, all dukkha occurs because of attachment in the five khandhas. Attachment to one or the other or all of them together or whatever, any kind of attachment regarding the khandhas is dukkha. For example, if there's some pain in, say, the foot, it's only just a certain kind of physical situation which has a certain impact on the nervous system, and that is felt as pain, and that's all there is to it. It's just a certain physical phenomena. And if there's no attachment, If there's no attachment in there, it's not really dukkha. If this is something we often confuse, just ordinary pain from real dukkha, from real suffering, we often confuse the two. But if there's no attachment, then it's not really dukkha. It's just a physical phenomena. It's just something natural. But as soon as the feeling arises, I hurt. It's my pain. My foot might fall off, or I might die, or whatever. Then a very tiny physical problem is blown up into a huge spiritual problem, a huge mental problem. So that people take simple physical difficulties and blow them up into fear, worry, neuroses. People even go crazy because of little physical ailments. Some people even die from the shock of having some minor physical mishap because of upadana. Suffering does not occur because of these natural situations. Suffering occurs because of upadana, the sense of I and mine regarding natural things. The Buddha did his best to help us understand this situation with upadana. And one of the ways he tried to explain it is using a simile. There are two kinds of arrows. There's just the ordinary kind of arrow. And then there is a second kind of arrow that has been soaked in poison. The tip of the arrow has been soaked in poison. And so then a person gets shot with the ordinary arrow. The ordinary arrow pierces this person's skin. And then there is pain, obviously. But that's all there is. There's just pain felt by the nervous system. But then the second arrow gets shot right in the same place. And the second arrow is coated with poison, has been soaked in all kinds of nasty poison. How much more is that going to hurt? How much worse is that going to make the wound? How much more damage is that second arrow going to do? The second arrow is upadana. The second arrow is that feeling of I, of mine. So this helps us to see the distinction between physical pain or the characteristic of dukkha in things and the dukkha that is experienced directly by the mind because of upadana, because of I and mine. Please be very careful to remove this second arrow and don't let it shoot you again. But for the most part, we're getting shot by this second arrow pretty frequent. When a knife cuts our finger, cuts the finger, then the finger has been shot by the first arrow. Then when we think or feel, I have been cut by the knife, or my finger has been cut by the knife, then we've been shot by the second arrow, the arrow that has been soaked in the poison of attachment. And the same kind of and then once that happens, there is enormous suffering. The mind is in torment, and we've all of a sudden got a big problem. if, and it's the same with everything. If there's just a natural mechanism taking place, there's no problem. But as soon as the second arrow of attachment, of I and mine comes in, then there's a big problem. If we can understand this point, this one simple point, then we will understand Buddhism quite well. Our study of Buddhism is generally excessive. We study many things that aren't really necessary. We often study things that are irrelevant or trivial. We're always asking questions about why do things have to be this way, or when did this happen, or why do monks wear that color, and things like this. We ask a lot of questions that aren't really necessary. The Buddha, to help us understand the danger of this, mentioned another simile. There was a man who was shot by an arrow, and then he was laying there in pain, and his friends came to help him. They were going to take out the arrow so that he would feel better. But then he said, "Wait, don't take it out yet. Before you take it out, I want to know who shot it and what caste is the man who shot it and what kind of arrow is it and who made the arrow and what kind of wood is it made from and what kind of poison is it coated with." And he had a long list of questions. And he wouldn't let them take out the arrow until they answered all the questions. Is our approach to Buddhism the same as this, where we ask a lot of unnecessary questions and so never get around to removing the arrow? And so please be very careful about how you go about studying Buddhism. Don't ask questions which aren't really necessary. Whenever you have the opportunity to ask questions of a teacher, please don't ask too many. If we ask too many questions, then there'll be so much information that the real information will get lost amongst all the irrelevant stuff. Just ask the necessary questions, the important questions. The most important question is how to remove attachment from the five khandhas. If we can keep things direct and simple like this, we'll save ourselves a lot of time and energy and confusion. Thus, we can summarize this all by saying that in Buddhism, the important thing is removing attachment from the five khandhas. All we need to do, all we need to study, is these five khandhas right here, these living khandhas of our own life. Study them. Study them when there is just the khandhas, when there are pure khandhas without any attachment. And then study the upadana khandhas, the khandhas that are being clung to as I and mine. If we see more and more clearly the pure khandhas and the khandhas that are clung to, this is this is all we really need to do. This is what vipassana is about. It's not necessary to go anywhere to do vipassana. Just examine the khandhas, study the khandhas, scrutinize the khandhas very, very carefully to know what they are like, what the pure khandhas are like, the khandhas without attachment, and what the upana khandhas are like, the khandhas that are being clung to as I and mine. This is all we really have to do in Buddhism. In Buddhism, we have a special name for the person who has been completely successful in their study and practice, to the point they've finished. They've done everything that needs to be done. We call such a person an arahant, an arahant. To understand what arahant means in a very simple way, we don't have to give any complicated definition. An arahant is just the pure khandhas. What we call the arahant is the name we give to body-mind that is just these five pure khandhas without any attachment. In the arahant, there is no attachment whatsoever, not even the least bit. But in us ordinary worldlings, us thick ones, ordinary thicksters, there is always attachment. There is constantly arising attachment. In some of us quite a bit, in others not as much. And this is the difference between the arahant and the worldling, the thick one. Whether there is any attachment left or not. The word arahant has turned out to be very difficult to translate into English and in other European languages. And most of the translations we've seen are not very good. So to keep things correct and simple, we ought to define or understand arahant as a life of pure khandhas without any attachment. Where there are just pure khandhas without any attachment, that is the arahant. This is a simple and clear definition. When there isn't any attachment, there is no suffering. The arahant is completely beyond, completely free of dukkha. And so what this means is to have completely removed all attachment from the five khandhas. That's how it's traditionally said. We talk about extinguishing attachment in the five khandhas, or removing all attachment from the five khandhas. But if we spoke a little more correctly or a little more precisely, we could say that the thing to do is to prevent the arising of attachment in the five khandhas. To always be removing attachment is a real hassle. But to stop it before it happens is much, much more exquisite. What they say, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And so the real thing is to live, is to understand Dhamma. Know the Dhamma, understand Dhamma. And then by being careful, by being mindful and careful, never slipping or making mistakes, preventing the arising of attachment in the five khandhas. So don't just get rid of attachment. Stop it from happening. When we use the word being careful or not being careless. The Pali word is apamatta. This is a very important word. When we say be careful, don't be careless, what we mean is it's like the house, our house is on fire, and we've got to hurry and get all our possessions out as quickly as we can. This is what we mean by being careful. If we wait and have to ask, well, who started the fire? And where did they buy the gasoline? From what company? And who made the matches? And what way is the wind blowing and all these things? Then the house will burn down. So the thing is just to hurry and get everything out of the house before it burns down. So be very careful and get rid of, eliminate, and prevent all attachment regarding the five khandhas as quickly as we're able to do so. So we're worried that you'll spend too much time on studying unnecessary things, and that your things will go too slow, and you'll never achieve what should be achieved. And so we encourage you just to give your attention to the central issue, finding out what attachment is, how it arises, and learning how to get rid of that attachment. Regarding the five khandhas, learning how to remove it all. And so we encourage you to give all your attention to this and not spend time asking unnecessary questions that aren't really relevant or practical. Just do what needs to be done to remove all attachment from the five khandhas. The system of practice that is called anapanasati, mindfulness with breathing, is an excellent way to remove attachment from the five khandhas. You've come here with an interest in learning about anapanasati and learning how to practice it. So we encourage you in this and hope that you can maintain the focus in using anapanasati to remove attachment from the five khandhas. This is the only thing that we need to be interested in. We've been talking about the noble truth of dukkha. Dukkha ariya satya. And we should understand it's important to get clear that there are many ways of talking about dukkha. This is one of the difficulties of language. When we use the word dukkha, we can mean to the dukkha, the pain, the misery itself, that which torments the mind, that dukkha itself. When we say when we use dukkha, it can be the thing itself, or we can mean dukkha as that which brings dukkha, that which leads to suffering. And this is somewhat different. And then another meaning of dukkha, another way of using the word, is having the characteristic of dukkha, having the lakana of dukkha. There are these three ways of understanding dukkha. Dukkha that is directly experienced, dukkha that is torment within the mind, the things that lead to that dukkha, and then the characteristic of dukkha in all conditioned things. Because dukkha can be understood because of the inherent difficulty of language, the inherent ambiguity, the way we have to twist words around to try and explain things. We're left with these three different ways of using the word dukkha. When we talk about the noble truth of dukkha, it's important to understand that the dukkha that is meant here is the first kind, that dukkha that torments the mind. This is our problem. The others are not really a problem. The problem is this dukkha that is tormenting us and preventing us from being at peace. It's this dukkha that we directly experience as pain and misery in the mind that arises from upadana. If we understand how to remove attachment from the five khandhas, then we will understand this noble truth of dukkha sufficiently. When you have understood dukkha thoroughly, then you will see for yourselves that it is the most ugly thing there is. It is the most frightening thing. It's the most disgusting and terrible thing there is. We'll see this for ourselves when we see dukkha. If we don't see this fact, if we haven't really seen dukkha, then we'll fall in love with it. When we don't understand dukkha, when we haven't seen it as it is, we fall in love with it. We keep attaching to things. We fall in love with attachment. Because attachment has an incredibly powerful attraction. This I in mind is terribly deceptive, and it has a very profound influence. And so it's very easy to fall in love with ego, with upadana, with attachment. And so instead of getting free of dukkha, we fall in love with it. And then we keep plunging ourselves into dukkha over and over again. So why do we have to dress up in beautiful clothes? Why do we have these beauty pageants? Why must we eat delicious food? Why must we do all these things? The reason is that we have mistaken dukkha for happiness, and we've fallen in love with dukkha. We've fallen in love with attachment. And so for this reason, we turn life into a lot of dukkha, a series of difficulties and problems. So in short, please know dukkha in the three ways that we mentioned at the very start yesterday. See dukkha as being painful, as being tormenting suffering. Second, see dukkha as being ugly, and disgusting. The most ugly, disgusting thing there is. And third, see dukkha as the most empty, meaningless, worthless thing there is. If one sees dukkha in these three ways, then one will have understood the noble truth of dukkha thoroughly. We could speak on and on and on about dukkha. There are all kinds of little details we could mention, but what we have discussed so far is enough. What is attachment? And how to remove attachment. This, if we understand this, then we understand the noble truth of dukkha, dukkha adiyasaccha. So this is enough talking about this First Noble Truth. And so we'll finish our talk on the Dukkha, the Dukkha Ariyasa. And that's it also for today.